Our next speaker this morning is Herman Levet, who will talk about long-time preservation, the time after. Okay, welcome.
Welcome, everybody. My first remark I have to do is we came here and spent about 3 days talking about long-term preservation and degrading quality. And I have to admit that I need glasses to read my paper. So what does it tell us? I would say we can't preserve all, and we have to accept that. And in some cases, we can't choose what we preserve. I choose the title, The Time After, because this presentation is focused on the proceedings after we digitized our analog collections, after we changed our recording equipment from analog to digital. Does not work. Yes. In the year 2001, when I visited the YASA conference in Aarhus, Denmark, it was my first YASA conference, in every second presentation I heard the expression, damn. It was used as if all in the room would know the meaning and nobody would need a hint about what this damn could be. At the near end of the conference at last, I dared to ask during one of the presentations what the meaning of a damn was and what it was used for. The answer was not really sufficient. A damn is a digital asset management system. It is a system that manages the digital asset. At that time, the Austrian Mediathek just started digitizing of her audio collection and handled about 5,000 digital recordings. We had a catalog which, beside the metadata, contained links to the files to achieve direct access. A logical file tree structure made it easy to find the files even without the catalog. Therefore, at that time, I felt no need for a system to manage my asset. Now, 9 years later, after that conference, we deal with nearly 60,000 digitized recordings, and I got some ideas about the need of managing the asset. Migration, for example, is a work that showed necessarily to be done regularly. In our case, we had 2 migrations in less than 10 years. Increasing a certain amount of files, you need routines to check their status, integrity check. This point is getting stretched with the need of performing regular reports about the actual content. But I also found reasons not to let a system do this responsible work. One is that most of these systems follow their own programmed concepts and tell just partly of what and how they are doing it. I insist on exactly knowing how, for example, checks are done. This is relevant for interpreting occurring misbehavior. If, for example, the system tells me that it does not find a file, this not consequently mean that the file does not exist. It would be useful to know how the system defines a search for the file. Only then the value of such a message can be estimated. The handling with digital asset in terms of long-term preservation is a quite new subject where nobody can claim to have the complete overview and to know all necessary workflows in detail. We all are still researching the correct procedures, and therefore we are forced to analyze, criticize, and casually change the running workflows. It is much too early to leave the service for our content to systems. Another reason not using a system is that most of them claim to be the only one to manage my content. That in many cases leads to usage of own file systems or and to the act of changing file names in charge to be sure not to create doublets. But changing the file names leads to the fact that the links in my catalog, for example, will become dead links. Many of these mostly expensive DAM systems make you more dependent than it would be necessary. This makes you also dependent from the manufacturer. This argument leads to the same problems I had with mass storage systems. As long as they are proprietary, the existence of your content depends on the existence of the system. Let us shorten my arguing to the following statement. I don't trust systems. They pretend to do my work, think for me, and even make decisions for me. But this leads to a dependency I don't admire. They claim to make life easier, but this works only as long as you don't try to change or extend their concepts. Behind every system stands the concept of a manufacturer. Manufacturers naturally think mainly in market-based strategies. The archiving strategies they sell with their systems are just as important to them as they are necessary to find customers. But their main business is selling, not archiving. What are the concrete tasks of a DAM? The tasks are not so complex as these systems often behave. But let's just go through the features and you need for managing your assets. This won't be a complete list of all possible features a DAM can offer. I just describe the needs that show to be relevant at the Austrian Mediathek to manage the asset in a responsible way. So if I missed an important point, please don't hesitate. Tell me afterwards. I'm always open for suggestions. As a reference, I use the OIS reference model to compare with our solutions. Part of the OIS model is to try to summon all necessary features which a preservation system should have. At the Austrian Mediathek, instead of one complex system, we deal with a couple of tools. So let's go through my list of necessary features and compare it with the OIS reference model to see what we fulfill and where we differ. For me, it seems to be a fact that from the moment you deal with electronic files, you have to change the storage so often that in a middle term view, migration becomes a part of the regular service. The reasons why you have to migrate may differ. The increasing amount of needed storage could overgrow your existing storage system. The storage media might need to be upgraded, for example, from LTO2 to LTO4 or 3 to 5, because you're forced, because 5 cannot read 2 or so on. As it happened one time in our case, market decisions made an end to the support of the system. This last possible reason for migration is not mentioned in the OIS. If you have a DAM system, the change of such a system will be an additional reason why you find yourself forced to migrate your asset. Increasing the number of possible reasons shortens the statistical life cycle of your mass storage. That's my opinion, my conclusion. My personal experience in two migrations in 9 years. This is why I don't absolutely agree with statements in the OIS model, which says, today's digital data storage media can typically be kept at most a few decades before the probability of irreversible loss of data becomes too high to ignore. I don't agree with this sentence. At the OIM, we used a self-made Linux script to control the migration from A to B. We involved checking procedures into the action to be sure that the file were not corrupted and kept the original conditions. Also, we aimed to get proper documentations about the status of the files, and even about the act of migration itself. Having this script running on an extra Linux machine makes this tool independent from the running storage system. But the most important thing is that it is possible to interpret whether and how the tool is actually doing its work. Any adaption can be done easily and quickly. As suggested in the OIS model, we prove the original character of the files. Our way to do this is comparing the hash code. By documenting the original hash code in an extra file, we get the possibility to compare not only the hash codes between the old one and the new files, we also compare the new hash code with the original one. This also proves whether the file has been altered in any way during the existence on the old storage. This feature meets the suggestions of the OIS. Increasing a certain amount of files, you need routines to check their status. It makes a difference between asking your database which files you should have and making a physical check. As the part of electronic files in your collections increases, we have to perform regular overviews. Making such reports showed to be an important issue. It is an equivalent of the physical examination of the shelves. Again, Linux scripts were the most convenient way to get such features. The OIS model does not mention this need. Maybe it takes it as granted, I don't know. Following the idea, one copy is no copy, the Austrian MediaTek decided to store three copies in different places, in different systems. Not having a damn system means also to install the job of continuous copying to the other pools. There are many tools like AirSync, Robocopy or others which can fulfill this job. The need of installing, configuring and monitoring such a tool in a proper way possibly might be the most important disadvantage for not having a DAM, because that's what they offer mostly. But this is perhaps just in the first view. Using a given DAM system, you probably have no idea or even influence how these copies are done. You can just stick to the professional attitude to the customers and hope that they did a good job. If you want individual formatted reports or documentation of the copy acts themselves, the advantage of self-made solutions again increases. As we keep our digital content on three different pools, there's of course the need to make regular comparisons between the pools. It won't be enough to compare the numbers of the files. You get to know which concrete file differs in the pool. This need can be combined with the needed statistical reports mentioned above. I don't know a DAM which offers the flexibility to define such reports on the level of existing files, rather than entries in databases. Is it one or two? No. An individual need which hardly can be fulfilled by any DAM is a comparison between the existing recordings and the integrity of the links in our database. And this has to be done. This is a part which is still in progress. We plan to install an export of the metadata of each recording in an extra XML file, which will be stored beside the media file. This XML file will include the link, which then could be parsed and compared with the reports of the storage content. Storing the metadata in an extra file is also a suggestion of the OIS reference model. One task of DAMs is to prevent your files from being deleted or overwritten. There are situations when you have to overwrite existing files anyway. For example, when you have to correct files which have been corrupted during the period of coding by the digitizing system. This happened at the beginning of our digitizing activities, but appears less important with a growing quality of digitizing system and performance. But still, after 10 years of digitizing experience, we can't exclude the need of casually changing some of the files. Our solution to get the files still protected against unauthorized deletion is organizing the access rights to the directories. Only an automatism and the administrator have writing access. If someone has to move a file into storage manually, one of our colleagues who have no rights to do this, there's a defined folder from which an automatism takes it and stores it into the correct directory. So the write access is limited to this one folder. The directory in which the files have to be stored is created out of the file name following defined rules. So also the case you put it in the wrong directory can be shortened. The directory in which the files have to be stored, this file name is always a signature followed by additional short types. The directory contains defined parts of this signature. When I know the signature and its rules, it is easy to define the exact path of the file. This is a way how different tools can know the accurate path of each file without communicating together. So the catalog can write the correct link into the database and other tools can move the files into the correct directory and there will be a match. Organizing the ingest by automated imports from folders where the files get put by the users gives the opportunity to make some automated checks. There's a possibility to define arguments and or formats which will be accepted or denied. Arguments would be, for instance, whether the file name contains a correct signature. Checking for every new file whether there is already an identical copy in the storage, which might have a different status, is one of the most important requirements of the storage manager. We solved it by a check done by the automatism that moves files into the storage. It first merges the storage for identical file names. Any match will be compared about size and date. Then an error file appears in the old folder containing all this information. The move task will be stopped. Files which provoke such problems will just stay in the folder while the others will vanish. Not completely, they vanish from the folder. The administrator has to watch this folder for error files from time to time, but even anybody who puts such a problematic file into the folder can interpret the error file, her or himself, and in some cases solve the matter without the help of any administrator. There's another item which can be found in the OIS reference model, and which is also one of the advertised features of many DAM systems. It is a DRM, the Digital Right Management. The digital right, it is a feature that limits the use of a published or solid file to a certain period or area of use, depending on date or counts of playback. It also often can prohibit making copies or limit the use on defined application or end computers. The use of such feature can only concern copies and never the archive file. Until now, the Austrian Mediathek sees no need to determine the use of our content. Therefore, there was no plan about such features. Therefore, the whole part about DRM in the OIS does not concern the Mediathek. For the Mediathek, there's no essential need to buy a turnkey DAM system, especially as long as if it appears as a black box. The advantages of using scripts or given tools for each task instead are independency. I can follow and casually adapt my own concept independent from any vendor's strategy. That includes a decision when to start the next migration. Simple tools are mostly cheaper. Some are often free. Support is probably cheaper. I don't have to the whole system to buy. I just can buy what I need. Having separate tools enables you to make investment for the adequate tool you need. Adapted needs to do not force change to and therefore investing into a new system. You just adapt the concerned part. Individual parameters or additional needs can be more easily included in the workflows. And as we also heard in some other presentations, it's still not finished how we have to deal with our files. So there will come some changes, some new tools, some new ideas how to handle it. And so it's better to have the flexibility to react quickly to those changes. As you choose and combine your tools yourself, you know what your system does. Of course, with using separated tools and or scripts, you combine them to a kind of a system. Therefore, you should have a concept. And you should know what you do. But isn't this a part of running an archive? Shouldn't we know what we do? So you should know what you do anyway. So I don't agree with just buying a system which tells me what to do. Because, as I said before, I don't trust it. But, of course, the risk. I do it myself. So I have the responsibility for it. Be aware about the risk. If you decide to leave the apparently comfortable way of commercial systems, you take the total responsibility of your decisions. Horrible. This might be the hitting argument against self-made solutions. But who is responsible if your expensive commercial system fails? Even if you had a support contract, does any vendor charge you for the loss of your content? I doubt that anybody in this room has a contract which includes such cases. And even if, it won't substitute the loss of the content. That leads to the fact that in the end, you are responsible for a possible disaster anyway. It is the risk and the responsibility that drives me not to trust a black box. Thank you. I can see you.
Okay. No, we need it for the translation. I'm sorry. Can we get the mic to work?
Come here.
Relational database system, did you ever consider the possibility of using it and instead of storing your assets in files, store them in what is called a blob data type? Am I clear?
You mean the metadata or you mean the total asset?
The assets Did you ever consider the possibility of using a relational database system to store your assets?
Well,
if and the metadata, of course, you could store it there.
Well, I have a metadata. I have a database for the metadata.
Okay. And why do you store? Then the question would be, why did you decide to store the files outside the database?
Ah, it's additional. It's just for even this database we got. It's a very, very quick running, a very fabulous machine, fabulous software, but it's proprietary. So if they stop, what to do? If I have an additional export of this metadata in an extra file, and it's a cheap XML file, I can import in any other database without need a communication with the old database. That's the idea. And it's also it's a point in the OIS model that you should have additional the metadata additional as an extra file outside of the database, because also you can't trust the database. That's okay. Is it okay?
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. Thank you.
Just a couple of comments. One is that I think some of the general statements you made do a very large disservice to a very large amount of commercial companies who have worked very, very hard and spent millions of dollars and years to develop systems to specifically meet the needs of the archival community and other communities. And to say, as just an overreaching statement, that their only goal is to sell stuff and to move on is inaccurate and offensive.
Okay.
Let me continue just for 1 second. The practical reality is that even if you choose to do your own, roll your own, which is fine, you must rely on commercial systems unless you are rolling your own chips, rolling your own operating systems, rolling your own monitors, rolling your own keyboards, and on and on. So one has to choose where in this spectrum are you going to, you know, make your own film also. Where on the spectrum between a totally integrated, single-purpose system and a environment where you're trying to do everything yourself. It is a continuum. It is not one or the other. And I think that you provided a distorted perspective. I think everyone has to do some things themselves because there is no one that offers an end-to-end solution on anything that I know of. But to say that manufacturers' goals are purely to sell stuff really does a tremendous disservice to a lot of people who put a lot of effort, me being one of them, for this community, and I think it's very unfair.
Okay. If you understand it this way, I want to excuse. I didn't say it's a purely goal. I said it's the nature. Of course, the company has to make the money to exist. And there, sorry, but I spoke with a lot of people, of a lot of companies. I got a lot of what they want to sell, and you're right, there's a lot of work in it, and I would like to use this work, but I can't, because I have to take this system or that system. I have no chance to combine this and that, because they are all proprietary, and they don't, they have to keep their own source codes, and they all don't have the perfect way. As I said before, and as you said now, there is no perfect way because it's not done. It's not an old procedure of the old age. We have to learn, and we have to change the workflows every month. And You're right, it was provocating, but it was thought provocating, because I see that some of us tend just to listen to the companies, what they offer, and they just can offer what they have. They can't offer what they want to have. So the danger is that I think they know what is to do, their system is perfect, I buy this system. And that's a great, great mistake. I have to know what I do, and I have therefore to know what the system I tend to buy is doing exactly. And in many cases, I don't know. That's what I said. And that's why I don't trust them. I don't say, don't buy it. I say, don't trust them. Ask them, question them.
I want to make two points. One is something that you raised early on, that I'm concerned our community doesn't draw enough attention to. You said that you didn't like that the asset management systems would change the file names so that there wouldn't be duplicate file names within your system. But there's not been very much discussion within our community about the uniqueness of our own file names, that we each have our own file naming systems. Hopefully there's a schema, but that's not to say that of tens of billions of files being created that I won't create a file that has the same name that you do, and what implication that has for preservation and access and identification of unique materials. So that's a question that I'd like to see the community take up more seriously. But to extend the discussion that you're having with Jim, that, you know, where on that continuum do you choose to roll your own versus using something off the shelf? A nice tidy package that a vendor may provide you for an asset management system is one place to draw the line. And, you know, if you want to make your own silicon, knock yourself out. But I think that Jim's hyperbole doesn't make the point that you can make your own silicon, you can make your own operating system. Once you start writing your own code, if everybody in this room, of all our institutions, were to start doing that, how much effort is being wasted in the duplication of that effort? So that if we all went out and bought a programmer or had somebody on our staff who could have the skills, and I have somebody on my staff to do this, so I understand the advantage of it, but how much effort is being wasted? How much expense being lost to unique workflows from institution to institution? If we can sort of agree on file types and the value of metadata, why do our metadatas and our workflows have to be so different? How much waste is there?
Okay. To the first thing about the metadata, I think it's a need in every archive that inside of the archive, the signature has to be unique. So if it is not unique, what occasionally happens, it is a mistake which you have to solve. So I would prefer a system that tells me that this signature is existing. So there is a doublet, do anything, then just to make it easy and give it another name. And I know systems which do this. I don't say they all do this, but there are some. The second point, you are completely right. I was not intending to sell solution. I don't intending to tell you do all your own scripts. I just wanted to show what we did, and why are we quite lucky or happy with it, and just want to kind of awake you that it makes sense to take the responsibility, to think about it, and to question. Even my solution has to be, I have to question my solution every day. Of course, it makes no sense if everyone is inventing the reel again. So What I didn't tell is all we do and all we did and all we do, we intend to publish as open source and give it free for further extension, for further usage.
Well, maybe then what we need in our community is there are other organizations, the work we saw from Audiovisual Preservation Solutions and the Harvard Toolkit that came out of Sound Directions. There are open source code out there. You know, yeah. Which organization can be a central repository, or we just say we can put it all on SourceForge or wherever. Where can the rest of us go to look for your code?
I don't know yet. I can't say it now because this will be a part I can't do this year. I have to start next year because I don't have the time this year. We have too many projects. But I will publish in the Yaza, for example.
It's not a question, but a comment from an analogy. When we went to Fear of Congresses 20 years ago, 40 years ago, or even 50 years ago, we always included a visit at the vaults or at the lab, if that particular archive that was hosting the Congress had a lab. And the principal concepts took about 30 years to sink into everybody's mind, and then now the vaults are pretty much the same, but still they're not the same. Everybody is reinventing the real, so to speak, on their own premises to some extent, but not everything is reinvented. And I think what we're seeing now is that we are at the same stage in this new world that we have to embrace, and there's nothing wrong with being somewhere in this continuum that Jim mentioned, and some are on one end and others are on another end, and we can learn from each other. I used to hate these vault visits because I didn't want to look at film cans on shelves until I realized, like rather a decade into this practice, that every time I went to a vault I could learn something from it. And I think our learning curve has become steeper and we are learning faster, and that's a good thing. So I think these approaches are not necessarily competing. I understand that your feelings are hurt, but I don't think he meant to hurt you. And so maybe this analogy can be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Herman Levet, for raising our awareness of the trickiness of digital preservation. And thank you, Martin, for that little analogy. I guess next time I come visit you, I'll ask to look at your print boards.